From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
You're clearly politicizing the process now because you've gone beyond the scope of what the Senate was doing by adding other state funds in GRF. When is enough enough? When can we stop this charade?
When you vote for it.
I can't speak for that side of the aisle, but I can say that over here, we put up bills because we believe in them, because we believe they're the right thing to do, because we believe that they ought to pass as is. And we believe that right now the child care crisis, the crisis of breast cancer screenings, is so important that this funding cannot wait another minute. And if the governor believed that too, it would already be signed into law.
I just hope that as this summer goes along, I know the tensions are getting higher, but I think this is an example where I think that we could build on, as opposed to going down this path of child's play strictly for political purposes, and I think that's unfortunate.
A couple of Republicans talking at the beginning and end, and a Democrat in the middle, and there what they were debating was spending federal money when Illinois is missing a state budget. And that was one of the issues this week at the Illinois State Capitol. We'll be talking about that and some drama in Illinois higher education in the past week, all ahead on State Week. Our panel this week includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Brian Mackey, State House reporter for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio. At our State House Bureau, Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio. And joining us, John O'Connor from the Associated Press. John, thanks for stopping by. And John and Amanda, we'll start with you two. You can duke it out. But we had some legislation that came up before the House this week. In the scheme of things, it was designed to spend authorized spending federal money that comes into the state, passes through the state budget. The Democrats in the House tried to add a little bit more to that package. They were unsuccessful. The governor had been threatening a veto if they did that. In the end, they pushed a bill that they called a clean bill that didn't have that extra spending on. The House and Senate legislation each differ a little bit. That has to be reconciled. But in the end, was this a win for the governor and a loss for the speaker, or is that awfully dramatic language to use for spending some federal money that's already sitting in a bank account?
Well, Bill, you just explained the whole situation, so we don't need to add anything. This is a federal money that comes to Illinois for specific programs, mostly for needy, low-income people who need services. And it would have been included in a state budget if there had been a state budget. But as we know, we are 8 weeks, 7 weeks, 6 weeks, I guess, into a new fiscal year without a state budget because of disagreements between the Republican governor and the Democratic majority in the legislature. So this seemed to be a reasonable way for the two sides to agree. Here's this federal money that can be spent. All it needs is appropriation authority from the legislature and the governor. It swept through the Senate without any opposition, 57 to nothing last week, and it's it was about just under $5 billion, so it would take care of a lot of services, women, infants, and children, nutrition programs for women and their babies, cancer screenings, and energy bill assistance for low-income people. When it got to the House, the Speaker, Michael Madigan of Chicago, a Democrat, added about $1.4 billion. Now, some of that was overlooked federal money, and part of that $300 million of that came was a request from the governor's office. The Senate overlooked this money that's available for emergency preparedness. But among that $1.4 billion, about half of it was state spending. Now, the governor doesn't want to have to deal with any state appropriation authority, any state spending, because there is no state budget, and he didn't want the Democrat. He has thought that the Democrats in the House have been, in the legislature, have been trying to pass and adopt portions of a budget as we go along, one month at a time or one program at a time, and he wants to negotiate the whole thing. So he promised to veto this bill. In the end, it appeared, at least at first blush, it appeared to be a win for the governor, because the Democrats were going to have to go it alone on this enhanced bill with the state spending, and they needed 71 votes, a three-fifths majority for it to take effect right away, and that's the number of Democrats that are in the House. Well, yesterday, only about 60 Democrats attended, so they knew they didn't have enough votes. They debated the bill anyway. You heard some of the debate at the top of the show. And in the end, it went down. It didn't have enough votes to pass. So the Democrats had an alternative waiting. And it was, as you described, Bill, a clean bill with just federal funding. And now there are some arguments that that doesn't go far enough. Madigan explained afterwards, well, one reason I put this state spending in is because we need to have state matching funds. We have to put forward state money in order to access all that federal money. And there's disagreement about when that state money has to be put up.
So basically, when you look at it from this perspective of who is it a win for, in a sense, in the immediate way, yes, it was Rauner. He got his way. He got what he requested here in terms of these state dollars not being part of the package. The measure failed when it was went before the House for a vote. But if you take a step back, this may be part of a broader game on the part of Madigan, and it appears in many ways that is obviously the case for a couple of reasons. First of all, you have Republicans on record, most of them voted present, not no. This bill that would have included the extra state money. So basically, Democrats can say, hey, these Republicans, there's a campaign brochure. They voted against spending for this important program and that important program. Further, Madigan said, just you wait. By the time all is said and done, before the fiscal year is over, the Rauner administration will be asking for these very same dollars to be spent for the reasons that John just indicated. That because if Illinois doesn't send this money and allocate it for these programs, then Illinois will lose out on federal cash and be worse off budgetarily from a fiscal standpoint than when it started. And then, of course, you have to look when you're looking at winners and losers. All too often that is forgotten in this, you know, political games here is the people who use these programs. And that was what Republicans are to argue. They said, don't do this. You know it's going to fail. We all agree these are important programs that we want to fund, women, infants, and children, energy assistance, for example. But energy assistance that was included through these federal dollars is only a portion of it. There's also state money that is a specific line item. It can't be used for anything else. It's money that's tacked onto the energy bills you and I and everybody else pays when you turn on the lights, turn on your heat, turn on your AC, and it helps to go toward people that don't have the money to pay for air conditioning and heat. And that was included in the Madigan subset. And for example, what about them? Where Madigan said people that are either victims or potentially going to have breast cancer or cervical cancer, no money for the screenings. Okay, Republicans voted against that. So that's what you need to consider when you determine winners and losers.
There are a couple of things that he – I asked Speaker Madigan when he spoke to reporters after later in the afternoon yesterday on Wednesday that if – you know, he made a comment that this bill, this clean bill, is going to increase the deficit in the state because the state money is going to have to be paid at some point. So I asked him, well, why let it pass then? And why let it go through if it's going to increase the deficit? He said, I have been very public about this. I am in favor of a tax increase. And so, as Amanda pointed out, sometime there's going to be a day of reckoning, according to Madigan, where this money is going to have to be paid, and either Governor Rauner is going to be asking for money for those services or for money to pay the federal government to for the money that Washington sent to Illinois. So it increases his leverage, Madigan's leverage, in asking for a tax increase. The other thing that Amanda mentioned, some of those programs that in that original bill, in that enhanced bill, one of those things was $480 million for child care for working parents. Now, this was a direct hit at the governor because as July 1st came, the new fiscal year came, and there was no budget, the governor said he needed to make a series of cuts. One of the things that he cut was eligibility for working parents to access state-funded child care. And the Department of Human Services acknowledges that 90% of the working parents who qualified are no longer eligible. So he wanted to increase that funding. And, you know, in the end, as Amanda pointed out, it's part of a political mailer that the Republicans were trying to keep working parents, you know, to trying to make working parents decide between a job and child care.
I was hoping we could take just – if you take a step back and think of the kind of dog day afternoon aspect of this, right? The governor has kind of decreed that the state budget is going to be his hostage, right? He's taken over these all these like I don't want any spending to go forth. I don't want to talk about a tax increase until we pass my pro-business anti-union agenda. Except he keeps letting the hostages out of the bank one by one. He signed – we talked about a little earlier, I think John mentioned it, that most of the budget the governor doesn't want, but he did sign the education budget. So a lot of us earlier this year when we were going into this new fiscal year without a budget thought, well, maybe once kids can't go back to school and parents have to scramble to deal with that, well, then they'll put pressure on the legislature and the governor and they'll come up with a deal. Well, the governor surprised some people by signing the education budget. So now that pressure point is gone. And you keep having this drip, drip, drip of spending that's happening. And, it's kind of these hostages getting let out of the bank. Who is going to be left to pressure the Democrats to work out a deal with the governor, or the governor to work out a deal with the Democrats, however you want to phrase that, in order to move the state forward? It's this smaller and smaller subset of people who depend on state spending.
Which I think is the strategy that Democrats are now taking. You've had Senate President John Cullerton updating a pie chart, basically showing how much of the state dollars are already being spent, and a series of House hearings. They already started. More are planned on consent decrees. The Rauner administration expressing its frustration with that, saying these consent decrees, court orders are really hamstringing our options, and we don't like that, all these continuing appropriations. Again, when asked about that, Madigan said, and he's right here, that the governor himself agreed to some of these. For example, it was the governor who was really asking the courts and agreeing to state employees getting their paychecks without a state budget. So whereas the Rauner administration is losing some of its negotiating power within the General Assembly by, as you termed it, Brian, letting the hostages out because all this money is going, it also has been in many instances doing that very willingly.
I'll just add take Charlie's thunder here, because if I don't say it, he will, that the governor had the opportunity with his extraordinary, I think it's rather extraordinary for governors to have a line item veto, the ability to line out parts of a piece of legislation that he doesn't like. He could have done that, and Democrats have pointed that out all summer. He could have taken the 20 budget bills that were sent to him, even though they were Democrats acknowledged that they were short on revenue by about up to $4 billion. He could have signed the education increase. He could have line item vetoed all the parts of the bill that included, except for the part of the bill that included salaries that he wanted to continue to pay state employees. And so they complain that, for him to say that a certain piece of legislation coming in August is going to increase the deficit, or that it's not part of the overall budget agreement, the Democrats counter that he had that opportunity to manage the budget, keep government going by excising from appropriations and budget bills that the parts that he didn't want or thought that would be too expensive.
And I think another element that's at play here is because of existing law, because of the court decrees and court orders, a big chunk of the general fund's budget is already out the door. Now, the administration says that the plan that the Democrats sent to the governor was $38 billion. We're only going to have $32 billion. And I haven't seen a detailed breakdown, but it occurs to me that because of some of the big ticket items that are going to be paid, we made the pension payment. We have to by law. We're paying most of the Medicaid expenses. We have to by law. We signed a school budget that was even bigger in the current fiscal year than last year by a small amount. So a lot of that $32 million or billion is already spoken for. And it may be that the stuff that's going out the door may actually be in excess when it's annualized of that $32 billion. And I haven't really seen a good analysis of that, but it occurs to me that we may already have committed ourselves because of these court orders, because of existing law, to spending more than we expect to have anyway.
Is there any way, Charlie, that that could really be changed with state government in the sense of all these things with consent decrees and other judges' orders that require spending to be that? Can the state do anything about that realistically?
Well, I guess I would fall back on the experience of people who are longtime observers of the state, wherefore, in my case, going back to the days of Dick Ogilvie, the late 60s, you really didn't have to worry about it because we had a responsible governor and a responsible General Assembly, and they went ahead and they passed the budget. You didn't have to go to the courts to get the state to pay what it was supposed to pay anyway. In a few instances, there were these kinds of situations, but never anything like we've had recently, and never a situation in which the argument was not about dollars and cents. How much money do we spend on this program? How much on that program? But rather, from the governor's position, he's conceded, yes, we need more revenues. But then he says, I'm not going to provide more revenues. I'm not going to go along with that unless you accept my other issues that I think are needed to move the state forward, basically all his anti-union stuff, some of the constitutional amendments he wants, which really aren't directly related to the budget, but he's trying to use the budget as a way to move the General Assembly to adopt some of his positions.
That's one of the things that Donovan Borvan, an associate counsel for Governor Rauner, testified Wednesday before the House Revenue and Finance Committee, that these consent decrees tie our hands and they never go away. Well, that's not entirely true. I'm not an expert in federal consent decrees, but I know that a party, a defendant, in this case the state of Illinois, in most cases can argue for the end of a consent decree when they can show the court that they have met the needs that caused the lawsuit in the first place. What we're talking about here are, for example, the foster care system in the late 80s was a mess. Children were being abused, even though that foster care is supposed to be, for children who are taken out of their biological homes because of safety issues, because of abuse or neglect, and put into foster care. Well, the foster care system wasn't that much better, so there was a lawsuit to improve that. Now, there is a consent decree, and that's one of those things that is forcing because federal law trumps Illinois law, and the state is, even without a budget, must pay what that consent decree says it must pay to make sure that those children are cared for. Now, I think in terms of school busing issues, the city of Springfield is under a 20, a 30-year-old consent decree for desegregation. And there are cities, Kansas City comes to mind, a place that was ordered desegregated by a federal court. And eventually they went to court and showed, no, we have achieved desegregation and we no longer need to bus. That's an example I can think of where a consent decree is eliminated eventually. But, that may be a lot more difficult in some of these other ones that the state is involved in.
But with a lot of those school ones, certainly they are still around in Illinois and other states that are from back in the 1970s.
Absolutely. I mean, for example, Springfield, they've talked for 20 years about trying to have that consent decree eliminated.
You're listening to State Week. Brian Mackey, Amanda Venicky, Charlie Wheeler, and the Associated Press's John O'Connor are the panel today. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. This week, the University of Illinois Board of Trustees Executive Committee threw out the door an agreement they'd reached last week with the Chancellor, Phyllis Wise, where they would give her a payment of $400,000 as she resigns. And the governor and some lawmakers and some others that watch higher education were saying, we've got to quit having these kinds of payouts, these luxury deals for chancellors and presidents and other top-ranking folks in Illinois higher education. Seemed like the governor's words had some effect on the University of Illinois Board of Trustees. Charlie?
Yeah, I think the initial settlement, I suspect, was forged because the university wanted to avoid some lawsuit being filed by the chancellor. And they had worked out a deal. Attorneys for her, attorneys for the university had worked out this very generous deal where she would be given, in essence, $400,000, a year's sabbatical, and then she would be on the faculty. And her announcement of her resignation came the day before it was revealed that she was using a private email to correspond with other administrators and outside counsel about issues that properly belonged in the public domain. Things, for example, the hiring and then dehiring of a professor because of his social media postings that were critical of Israel. There was also a dispute over creating a new college of medicine with, I guess it's medical engineering, on the Champaign campus. There were things like this that belonged in the public domain, and she was purposely using her private email and advising people, don't use the university email. And the media filed public information requests asking to see these emails, and the university stonewalled. Now, finally, they all came out. Some of them were heavily redacted. But all that contributed to her resigning, or maybe a better way to put it, being forced out the door with this sweetheart deal. And now, after the governor complained, after lawmakers complained, including the chairs of the higher education committees in the House and the Senate, the executive committee said, nope, we're not going to do that. You're out the door. You're not going to get your golden parachute. And I guess the message there is, if you want to sue us, fine, sue us.
Yeah, I mean, this comes, Charlie, in a climate of skepticism, growing skepticism in the legislature about higher education pay, particularly for administrators. I think you'll get people who will acknowledge, yeah, if you want somebody to teach computer science and they can go out to Silicon Valley and they're really good as a programmer and they could make a lot of money that way, then yes, maybe you do have to pay them a few $100,000 a year to lure them for that. But university administrators, there's been a growing resentment, particularly tied to the College of DuPage Community College up there, where was he the president Bruder up there? Yeah, he was forced out after accusations of lavish spending, perks, fancy tens of thousands of dollars spent at a fancy restaurant that he had built on campus. So, I mean, there's the legislature has been holding hearings on this sort of thing. It wasn't just the governor who spoke out about this deal. There were some legislators who spoke out as well, saying that they thought it was a bad idea. And so maybe you're beginning to see, you know, additional effects of this backlash. We'll find out when the new chancellor is hired, if he or she gets somewhat reduced or more modest contract. But there does seem to be a higher ed arms race across the country where people are just university presidents and chancellors at these high-profile schools are being paid more and more.
They're being paid more and more. In Illinois, there are so many people, it seems like, being paid not to work or not for their original job. But part of the sweetheart's deal for some of these is they're granted tenure, so they get to go back to teaching. But you can go around College of DuPage, Illinois State University paid somebody to leave. You've got
former president.
You've got some U of I folks in various stages of exit from the university over the last few years. You could field almost a pretty well-paid small sports team with all the people that are sitting on the sidelines of decision-making right now in Illinois.
Yeah, and if you were to combine all their salaries, you would almost have enough to pay a football coach or basketball coach at a Big Ten school. But, yeah, it does look bad, and particularly at a time when parents are struggling to send their kids to school. Tuitions have gone up. And we enacted several years ago a law that says when you start as a freshman at a public university in Illinois, whatever tuition you pay your first year is a tuition that you'll pay for the next 3 years, so that if you complete your degree in 4 years, you'll know what the tuition is. Part of the difficulty with that is this freeze on tuition, I think, has encouraged boards of trustees to kind of jack up that freshman year tuition, trying to figure out where do we want to be at the end of 4 years. And an even, what would you say, a more problematic situation, fees have increased dramatically. I know at our place, fees have just gone through the ceiling. And it's a way to get around this tuition freeze.
As much as state government. I wanted to mention also, though, that this question of the emails and the governor coming out with a strong statement that that was wrong. It did also come out this week that one of the governor's own top staff members, his so-called secretary of education, who's really just an education advisor. She doesn't actually run an agency or anything. She was using a private email account. The Sun-Times reported that story just a day after the governor had denounced in very strong terms or said that he had told his staff that they were absolutely not supposed to do that. The administration itself, as we said with U of I, had kind of stonewalled on releasing those emails, but did finally relent with some of the information.
Well, I think it's a situation that it's not a partisan thing. It's just kind of a mindset of people who are in administrative positions, even though they're overseeing public entities. They just don't want to share their private conversations. And so they go to their Gmail account or their Yahoo account or whatever, rather than putting it on the university account.
Seems
I mean,
so
it's the same thing that Hillary Clinton did.
Just pick up the phone, though, right? That's the solution here. If you want to hide from public view, meet them person to person or pick up the phone.
Is this in any of minds of any of the panel, is this latest incident and the board actually kind of changing what it was going to be a legal settlement, is that possibly setting the stage for a little bit of change in higher education, at least in Illinois, for some of the deals they come up that seem pretty sweet in these contracts?
Well, I would just say the governor has made it a point that he wants to really rein in what he calls I don't know if he's used the phrase out of control bureaucracy, but that was basically the thrust of his message, particularly at the U of I, which employs all of us except John on the panel here. But, you know, he sees the higher ed bureaucracy as over large and a place that he thinks that he can wring some savings out of.
That's all the time we have for this week's edition of State Week. Thanks to John O'Connor of the Associated Press for joining us today. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.